This podcast may contain language that's not appropriate for all listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Today we're going over The Duff.
Woo.
So if you haven't seen it and don't want us to ruin it for you, you might want to pass on this one, and we will see you next time. Are you ready for one dry kiss?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Ding, 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 ding. Oh, yeah. Ding, ding, ding.
Welcome to One Dry Kiss, our cussy, irreverent love letter to rom-coms, where we recap one singular Free to Be You and Me movie in the month of April. And today we are doing The Duff. And I am here with my lovely co-host, who I have often felt like the Duff next to, Miss Tamara Cosio.
And I have often felt like the Duff next to you because you are my deleteful, unique, fantastic friend, Corinne Edding.
Aww, delightful, unique, fantastic friend, Duff!
Uh-huh. That's for you, Corinne.
Aww, thank you. Okay, before we leave Free to Be You and Me month, it's time for me to bring this up one final time.
Great. Okay.
Remember how we are doing Lars and the Real Girl? And I said, those real dolls, you should look at them. The male dolls, creepy. Yeah. And you're like,
right,
sure. And then you didn't do it.
Uh-huh.
Well, then I sent you pictures.
Right. See, the universe was telling me not to do it. And that's why it kept slipping my mind, or maybe it was me just not wanting to do it. But of course, you forced your will upon me. And when I flipped on that screen, I was like, ah! And you were absolutely right. The girl real dolls are hot as balls. They look like real women. And the guys look like bad Ken dolls that have been stretched out and their faces contorted to Jesus.
Yes.
It is bizarre.
They are gaunt. They are not sexy. They are pale. They look like they will take you in the van and tie you up with duct tape.
And, yes. Yeah. And their expressions, too. It's not like smoldering, like come hither. It's just like, I want to eat your skin. Like, they don't even. There's nothing remotely sensual about any of it.
No.
Any of them. Thank you for sharing that with me, Corinne. Yes. No. You're like, oh, yeah, you're not going to go on the Real Doll website? Just like, bam, 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 bam.
I showed her three women doll examples, and there were like 15, 20 women real dolls. And then I showed her three out of like the five male real dolls that they had.
Oh, God. So that's not a chance that you sent me the worst ones, because there was only five. So three out of the five, you're getting a good sampling of what they have to offer, which is bad.
I didn't send you the one that had a mohawk, but he was also scrawny string bean too. So
yeah, I don't think that would have helped anything.
No.
Trying to picture the three that I saw with mohawks. No. Speaking of hair, I did something quite exciting a couple of days ago.
Oh.
I cut my own hair.
That's why you got the cute little bob action going.
Yep. Yep. I, dear listeners, went to get a haircut not too long ago, and I told the girl, I have curly hair, and can you cut curly hair? And she's like, oh, yeah. I walked in, and she's like, we're going to cut it dry. And I'm like, oh, this is exciting. I've never had it cut dry. So she kind of like went in with their scissors and chopped all over my head, kind of just at random. And I'm like, oh, okay, I guess this is how you do it. This is so interesting. I hope it looks amazing. And then, of course, she finished. She styled it. It did not look good, but most people don't style it to the way I like it after they cut it. So I was like, I'll just wait till I get home and play with it. And then when I got home and play with it, I'm like, there are strands longer than others. There are weird lumps in my head. I'm like, I do not care for this at all. And I tried rocking it because most of the time when I get haircuts, I don't like them for like the first week and a half.
Right.
But then it progressively got worse and it started really irritating me. So I watched some TikTok videos and I actually saw some hairstylists that cut dry hair. Yeah. And the way they cut dry hair was not even remotely close to the way she cut dry hair. So I was like, holy fucking balls. Okay. This girl fucked over my hair so bad that I can't imagine I could do any worse. I got my scissors. I know exactly what I want. I'm going to do it. So I cut my bangs and I cut my crown, and then I kind of shaped the back to get rid of all the wispy little long hairs that she left. Might do it again. Not sure. I'm happier with what I did than what she did, but I was very proud of myself.
That's awesome. Yeah, the last super duper bad haircut I had was my mom trying to do something nice to me before I started a new job. She says, let me get your hair cut. And I was like, okay. But she wasn't like, let me give you money for a haircut so you can go to like who you typically go to. She was like, there is a stylist at the place where I go to get my nails done, and she can do your hair. And I was like, okay. And so
you and your mom have very different hairstyles, just so everybody knows. Like,
well, but this isn't different. Even where she gets her, this isn't where she gets her hair cut. This is where she gets her nails done.
Oh.
And so I go to the stylist and, you know, but I got pretty easy to cut hair. And so I, you know, I was just like, you know, I just wanted to have a nice shape and, you know, just like trim it up, like whatever. And this is in the year 2012 or so. Okay. Maybe.
Okay.
And so sometime 2010, 2012, somewhere around there.
Got it.
She gives me the Rachel from Friends, which would have been great, like, I don't know, 10 years prior, but not now. Not now.
Oh, Pixar, it didn't happen. I need proof of this.
Oh, yeah. I was like, oh, no. It looked really good for a hairstyle that was very distinct and had its day. And most people really had to try to get their hair to look like that. But for me, apparently it was effortless. And I was like, this would have been really handy to have a long time ago. However, a decade later is not the time for the Rachel.
I heard that Rachel, Jennifer Aniston, who had the Rachel and made it so famous as hairstylist, was very sleep deprived and high on cocaine when he did that to her. So,
well, and here's the thing, there's a million layers in the Rachel, right? And so when I go to get my hair fixed from my regular hairstylist, she's like picking up pieces of hair and being like, I'm like, I know, I'm just gonna need to let this grow out, but is there any way you can help it? Anything you can do. And she was just sort of like looking at my hair sadly, like, what happened?
Well, I have the clippers and I forget a number two setting on it and just that's probably all I can do for you.
Well, your hair looks great and I am super excited about the hair venture that you had.
I know. Free to be me and you.
Yay! Ooh.
Corinne, speaking of free to be me and you, do you have a synopsis?
Do I have a synopsis for you?
I certainly hope so.
Bianca Piper, played by Mae Whitman, is a high school senior who has two besties and is enjoying her final year of school until at a party, her neighbor and high school classmate and quarterback Wesley tells her that she's her friend's Duff, designated ugly fat friend. This gives Bianca a complex and sends her on a journey of self-discovery. Will she discover that she is the Duff? Will she spin around like Wonder Woman and magically turn into a sexy goddess?
No, that's my job.
Keep those listening ears listening to find out. Tamara,
mm-hmm.
Are you ready to get the Duff out of this opening sequence and into the movie?
Oh, yes. Yes, 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 yes. I do have to say that Corinne was good enough to write half of this outline for me because it was Easter weekend when we were doing this and I was super busy doing a bunch of crap. And so this first part she lovingly titled, "Who the Fuck is Everyone? We Find Out Here," which I appreciated a lot.
When we do movies, a lot of times the very first portion of the movie takes the longest and is the most pain in the butt to do because that's when all of the establishing stuff happens.
Yeah. And this one is no different.
Yeah.
B, Bianca Piper, played by Mae Whitman, narrates, "I thought we were living in a brave new world, one where we weren't defined by cliques of jocks, nerds, criminals, basket cases, or princesses, a la The Breakfast Club. But senior year, I was made very aware that this brave new world was actually the same old world." As Bianca walks the hallway with her besties, Jess Harris, a statuesque blonde who looks like her likeness was carved out of marble in the Roman times, but with perfect beach curls, skinny jeans, and a lacy tank top, and Casey Cordero, a cute Latinx brunette who looks like she'd been in a Robert Rodriguez movie circa the 90s, wearing all black Nike high tops, short shorts, and a football jersey modified into V-neck cuteness. And Bianca, on the other hand, is wearing brown boots and cuffed overalls. Her hair is not perfection, and she's wearing an off-the-shoulder shirt that should be hot, but somehow is not. And as the camera pans over to her, she's in the midst of what could be a big yawn. It's basically the equivalent of being in a photo where everyone looks like perfection, but you were caught sneezing or something.
Aww.
Because Bianca, she's not ugly. She is a very attractive girl, but they really work hard to make her look like she's just a hot mess in the beginning, hence the yawn at the pan over shot. And Bianca tells us, Jess is hashtag the kind one, a fashion designer and Zen Buddhist. Casey is hashtag the tough one who kills it on the soccer field and hacks computers in her spare time. And I am the other one, a cult movie fanatic, the one who is always raising her hand at mic land in class and has the right answer, a mediocre violinist and the editor of the school paper.
She didn't call herself mediocre, though. I did.
Because she was. She's like, me, 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 me. Yeah. And she looks over, hopefully, at her fucking bandmate who's like, honey, please.
Yes.
If you think you're going to get a compliment out of me, you are sorely mistaken.
You are third chair for a reason.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I don't even think you're third chair. I think you might be fifth or sixth.
Yeah.
If there was chairs that could go outside in the hallway, that's where you would be sitting.
Amen. A trio of guys sees the trio of girls, and one comments, Jess is so hot, I'd bang her so hard, I'd need a helmet.
Oh, that's so romantic.
Uh-huh. Guy number two comments, Casey is so hot, I'd play Call of Duty with her all night. When he gets a look from his friend, he quickly follows up with, and I'd bang her so hard, I'd need a helmet.
Oh, see, he's the guy you'd want to date because he doesn't want to totally take sexual advantage of. He's like, I just want to hang out and get to know you and play video games, but I got to play it up for my bros.
Yeah, except for you would be stuck watching him play video games the entire time you hung out.
Boo! Oh, not if you were Casey. Casey's a fucking hacker. She'd probably own his ass.
Casey would totally own guy number two's ass for sure, as long as he was willing to give her a controller. But he seemed like he would be.
I don't put it past her not taking the damn controller and be like, bitch, I didn't come over here to watch you play video games.
I know. And then she beat him with the controller if he got feisty.
And whip him with the cord.
Yes. Bianca is described by the trio of guys as, oh, Bianca. Yeah, she has the hottest friends. Womp, womp,
womp, womp. They said it more like they were fishing, like, oh, Casey has this. Oh, Jess has that. Oh, Bianca has the hottest friends.
Yeah.
There's.
Everyone in the hall addresses Jess and Casey, ignoring Bianca, the jock handing out homecoming flyers. Jess and Casey have already bought their tickets, and Bianca is not going. There's a Vincent Price marathon on, for fuck's sake. Come on!
Well, I know. What are you thinking?
Seriously? I wouldn't pass up Vincent Price. Jeez. Señor Gomez, who doesn't have as good a grasp of Spanish as Bianca, and Minnie Stalin, Madison Morgan, the hottest girl in school that even gay guys want to bang, and she's passive-aggressive to her friends and aggressive-aggressive to her enemies. Aw, just the kind of person you want.
Uh-huh, and Madison is played by Bella Thorne.
Ooh, yes. Smoking hot Bella Thorne.
Mm-hmm.
And she does a pitch-perfect job of playing bitch.
Oh, yeah. I wanted to smack her through the TV screen.
Uh-huh. Madison invites Casey and Jess to a party and deliberately excludes Bianca, stating, "Sorry, Bianca, you need an invitation to get in, but if one becomes available, I'll make sure to let you know." Casey tells Madison to fuck off with her actions by tearing her invitation in half and giving half of it to Bianca, solving the problem and giving Madison a "Do you really want to fuck with me?" look. Bianca grudgingly gives in. And I'd like to take a moment to clarify one thing that I didn't include throughout this entire thing, because it comes up sort of towards the end, is Bianca, she's going to be a reality star.
What? You mean Madison?
Oh, fuck all.
You said Bianca.
Yes. Thank you. That explains the look you were giving me. The name Bianca, can we talk about the name Bianca for half a second? The name Bianca is a rich bitch.
Hot girl name.
Hot girl name.
It's a hot girl name.
And it does not go, like, she should have the name Jess.
Yes, or Casey.
Or Casey. But Bianca, I kept on putting Bianca's name for everybody else other than Bianca because her name didn't fit her.
No, I know. I completely got that. That's why when you said Bianca, I'm like, I know, wait, no. That look I was giving you was like, oh, shit, no, that's Madison. Madison, also not as hot a girl name as Bianca. Mm-hmm. Just going to say it. Going to put it out there.
So, thank you. So Madison feels like she's poised at the edge of reality star stardom. And she has her friend following her around everywhere, videotaping things with her phone.
Mm-hmm. If she was a few years later, she would have been like, I want to be an influencer.
Exactly.
I need to have my whole life documented.
I'm going to be Insta-famous. And then a few years later, I'm going to be TikTok-famous. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And so she would be doing fake unboxings and stuff, like pretending that she got stuff sent to her. And then like being like, look at this salad that I made. Isn't it delicious? And then pretend to eat it. Yeah. But yeah, oh, fuck you, Madison. But yeah, so her camera happy friend
is always close by. Literally.
Yeah.
Literally always close by.
Is always close by. And she's a voyeur in the largest sense of the world. Who needs security cameras when you've got her friend? She's just
what's her name? Caitlin?
Caitlin.
Caitlin the Creeper. That's what we're going to call her. Caitlin the Creeper.
Yeah. That's good. I like it.
I have to say this whole part, this previous part, it totally reminded me of like growing up with my sister because she was like, she always let me tag along. I was a little sis. I'd be walking around, but we'd be like, Hey, Denise. And I'd be like, nobody's saying hi to me and that's fine. As long as I'm with the cool kids. But I knew it. I wasn't like completely oblivious. I'm like, I know my place in the world. That afternoon in journalism class, we get the utter delight of having Ken Jeong. Ken Jeong, fact, he was actually a practicing physician before he decided to pick up acting. Did you know that?
Yes.
I love that fact. And he is in this movie as Mr. Arthur, the journalism teacher who changes students' story ideas from the price of ice cream is going up 15 cents to the school serves pizza 5 days a week with taxpayers' money, which should be used to be feeding students healthy food that won't cause pizza-induced diabetes. I cover the story. He asks if there are any volunteers to write about student life. The previously engaged room of students does their best to look busy and unavailable, especially Bianca, who twists in her chair towards the wall so much she might as well be putting herself in timeout. And Mr. Arthur zeroes in on her. Bianca! I want you to step out of your comfort zone and bring your journalistic gravitas to an article on what homecoming means to me. She tries turning him down. I'm sorry, Mr. Arthur, but he interrupts. You're honored and thrilled to share your Bianca Piper magic? You want to do your thing and put some stuff into words and make it pop? That's so nice of you. Bianca's face says, yeah, that's not what I was going to say. But Mr. Arthur shuts that shit down by having a pretending conversation with Bianca, doing a higher pitched voice. Oh, no, I didn't. He argues back with himself. Oh, yes, I did. And I thank you. With that settled, Bianca tells her friends, this is going to suck. And what are we, five? What homecoming means to me? Jess suggests, maybe the universe is telling you to go. And Casey jumps in, come on, it's not that bad. Bianca points at Jess, you, stop with all the universe stuff. And you, she points at Casey, easy for you to say, I don't have a date. Jess has got it covered, though. No problem, she whips out her phone, looking at her available guy contact list. Swipe, swipe, swipe. Jack Rebus? Bianca turns him down. Tiny hands. Jess tries again. Swipe, swipe, swipe. Mark Warshaw, Bianca responds. Smells like trash. But then Jess, ha-ha, has it figured out. She found the perfect guy. Charlie Piper! Bianca is the most grossed out by this one. Ugh, my cousin, Charlie Piper? Jess scoffs. Well, people don't know that he's your cousin.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, fine, whatever. I'll keep looking. We'll find somebody.
Yeah, that's great. Let's just set us up with your cousin.
Incest. I don't think I'd be above going to a dance with my cousin if nobody knew he was my cousin. Actually, I would. I shouldn't say that because there were as many a times where I didn't have a date to the dance and I just didn't go. While my sister and two cousins and all their friends went and I was at home, lonely, alone, alone, alone by myself. And my sister was nice enough to take pictures of it. There was me sitting in my foster mom's dining room table in my sweatshirts and shorts. And she was like, everybody was taking their cute, like, dance pictures all dressed up. I think it was Sadie Hawkins.
Uh-huh.
And she's all, Tam, click. And I'm like, what the fuck did you do that for? She's like, to document this occasion. And I'm like, what, that I don't have a date? Fuck off.
Yeah, in high school, I literally went to one dance. And that was my freshman year. It was out in the quad. It's kind of fun for a brief period of time. And I think I left. I probably didn't stay more than a half an hour per use. So
yeah. Yeah, high school dances aren't that great. I think our prom was the best, but we'll get to it when we get to the homecoming dance. Because I have a story about that one too.
Ooh. I didn't go to prom. Didn't have a date and didn't have any friends, and so I wasn't gonna go because just wouldn't have been fun. So Bianca appreciates just looking out for her on the guy front. But if Bianca's going to be honest, there was only one guy she wanted to be her homecoming date. The amazeballs Toby Tucker, a hunk with slow motion moving honey blonde hair who plays the guitar and drives a Vespa and is, oh yeah, so amazeball. But when Tucker says hi to Bianca, all she can do is say, okay, bye, and rush off. Bianca, however, is not struck speechless by football captain Wesley Rush, who she grew up next door to, used to be friends with, but now they just antagonize each other. Wesley approaches Bianca while she's standing at her locker. Hey, neighbor, I saw you watching some Japanese horror movie last night. Bianca's defensive. Were you spying on me? He rebuts. A, don't leave your curtains open, as their bedroom windows are directly across from each other. He continues. And two, it's hard to miss a bunch of Japanese people running and screaming for their lives. It looked horrible. By the way, all that reading. Bianca nods her head. Yeah, those would be subtitles. And Wesley looks around the hall. Great. Yeah, so where are your girls at? Bianca rolls her eyes. Who wants to know? He cockily responds, the only man in your life. And Bianca scoffs. Not if you were the last man on earth. Wesley banters back, sticks and stones, patting over his hurt heart and quickly pivoting. Speaking of stones, have you seen my rock hard abs? Touch him. Graze him. He pulls up his shirt to reveal his definitely rock-hard abs. And Bianca shakes her head, protesting. No, no, no one wants that. Oh, I think there's some people who want that.
I was going to say, are you sure about that, Bianca?
Yes. I have some laundry that I need to do.
Oh, no, Corinne, you didn't get that stain. Now you got to go back in for round two.
Oh, good looking out, Tam.
Yeah, yeah.
But their banter is interrupted by Madison swooping in and kissing the hell out of Wesley. Bianca narrates that Bianca and Wesley's relationship was like a strobe light, on and off again, 1,000 times. Madison breaks away from Wesley, giving him a light slap on his face and narrowing her eyes at Bianca and asking, were you just hitting on my ex-boyfriend? Bianca responds, I love that look on your face.
Okay, you, first of all, you said X, and second of all, why don't you just pee on him, Madison? Jesus Christ. Get all your pheromones all up on that because you don't want him, but nobody else can have him? Is that what you're saying?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Particularly not someone like her. She must be appropriately glorious.
But Madison is not glorious. Is she hot? Yes. Does her personality make her ugly? Absolutely.
Uh-huh. 100. It's no wonder that they are on again, off again, like a strobe light. Bianca responds to Madison. No, he approached me. Madison glares harder. We all know that could never happen.
Okay.
She glances back at Wesley, stating, I know you miss me, and walks off with a flounce. Bianca manages to get in the last glorious ribbing with Wesley, stating, that's a healthy thing you got going. I love that line. Wesley leaders on out, leaving Bianca all full of, what the fuck, standing in the hall, wondering, what happened? But isn't that the way high school is anyways? You spend most of your time wondering, What the fuck just happened?
Yes. Yes, you do. Now we're at Wednesday, or Madison's party, and the Duff reveal. Ooh. Bianca's getting ready with Jess and Casey. In a brief interlude, we found out that Bianca's mom, Dottie Piper, played by the illustrious Allison Janney, who we love so much in Juno and everything else she does pretty much,
yes,
fell apart after Bianca's dad left 3 years ago. But now she's living life in a power suit and started her own help movement after being inspired by an episode of The Simpsons that went through the 5 stages of grief. Now she's a local celebrity to the 40 and over self-help crowd, giving talks on the 5 stages of divorce. She explains to a hotel banquet hall, I was in the depressant stage about my ex, but I combined my ex with depression and got expression. She
so bad.
Is a magician with the words. The crowd goes wild. Ah, Dottie, Dottie. Okay, maybe they don't chant her name, but still.
They should be chanting her name. Yes.
Bianca explains that now her mom is more involved with her career and actually being a mom. So when Bianca's mom drops by Bianca's room where Casey, Jess, and her are getting ready for the party, it's not surprising that Dottie suggests Bianca project boldness with the power pantsuit combo. Ooh. Just what every teenage girl wants to hear. Nope. And if that doesn't work, add shoulder pads, shoulder pads, shoulder pads. Bianca turns her down, not wanting to look like Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton.
Oh, the shoulder pads.
Okay. It's like, I wish everybody could see the dances you're doing, Corinne, because they are phenomenal. You really embodied shoulder pads, even though you don't have any on.
I just think, well, okay, I don't know about you, but I have broad shoulders. And so when shoulder pads were in vogue, they were ridiculous on me. I was like, no, we don't need shoulder pads. I already look like a linebacker. Thank you.
Oh my God. Who are you talking to? Who are you talking to with that shoulder talk? I have to get my jacket specially made because they fit everywhere except across these bad boys. I look like big girl in a little coat. Big girl in a little coat. Every time I try to find a jacket that fits.
Ugh.
So I have to get it 2 sizes bigger or get it altered. Which, fuck, you know I don't do that shit. So I just get it 2 sizes bigger. Anywho, Bianca also turns down Jess's offer of a lacy camisole and a cute little black dress. Instead, she goes for her tried and true look. A black shirt that says, in light gray lettering, this is my lucky party shirt, along with the red flannel and the part of the look that really puzzles me, a pair of mid-length black shorts. Corinne wrote that. And I wrote, or is it perfect, showing some leg but not too much, giving everyone a little prequel to the...
Uh-huh, sure. That's what all the teenagers are wearing these days, a pair of mid-length black shorts. Uh-huh.
You forget, I was there for the 90s and that actually worked with the flannel.
Yeah.
And big chunky docks.
Yeah, that was a long time ago.
It's still, kids, bring it back. You know how fashion makes its rounds? It comes back into style.
Uh-huh.
Don't criticize what I thought was cool and still kind of hang on to with every, like, smidgen of my youth.
That's okay. I'm still wearing short shorts. I haven't gotten out of them yet. So, you know.
We went over to my house, Larry and I, last weekend to get some party clothes for all my fun outings that I did. And I say fun in quotation marks. And he saw a picture of me and my mom. And he said this like 2 or 3 times. But he like picks it up because I am full on like in some jean shorts and a plaid shirt. And he's like, hey there, grunge girl. And I was like, it was the fucking 90s, okay?
Yeah.
Like, I am the grunge girl, and that is entirely what I was going for. Jesus Christ.
You look good, okay? That's all I gotta say.
I know. I guess, did it look like I could also chop wood? Sure. But look good while I'm doing it.
Mm-hmm. Madison's party is at her house, a beautiful mansion in the kind of high school or college party I have never personally laid eyes on.
Neither have I, because of the neighborhood we lived in, Corinne.
Yeah. Broke down apartments and maybe super broke down ranch style houses. Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And Bianca feels really out of place. Jess and Casey encouraged her to dance with them. They're having a great time. But after a few bops, Bianca feigns thirst. Oh no, I'm so thirsty. I have to leave and get a drink. She heads inside to the food table, and while she's munching on an orange slice, she spies Toby playing his guitar and singing badly poolside, surrounded by a bunch of teenage girls who are all fawning over him. Her reverie is interrupted by Wesley, who pretends to think she's a boy. You're so funny, telling her she's looking handsome. You're so funny. And then asks if her friends have been asking about him. Wesley is winning in this moment, but don't you worry, gentle listeners. He's about to make this worse. However, first Bianca banters back. Oh yeah, I mentioned your name to my friends, and suddenly their eyes filled with this like childlike wonder, this indescribable sparkle. And then they started dancing super sexy with each other. Wesley grins. Oh yeah? Tell me more. Bianca scoffs. It's not my job to tell you about my friends. Wesley disagrees. But it kind of is, isn't it? I mean, you're their duff after all. Bianca's confused. Their duff? Wesley matter-of-factly states, duff, designated ugly fat friend. And let's take a moment to clarify that Bianca is not ugly, nor flat.
No.
But she definitely is a friend.
Uh-huh. And
maybe one of those F's in duff could be used to tell Wesley to fuck off.
Yeah.
Bianca looks hurt and says, what did you just say to me? Wesley brushes this off. Don't worry about it. Every group of friends has one. The one that doesn't look as good, making their other friends look better. The one who is easy to approach and talk to because no one's trying to get in their pants. And if you don't know who it is, chances are it's you. Bianca looks at him like a wounded puppy dog. And Wesley does some quick backpedaling to make being a duff seem like less of an insult. But Bianca isn't buying it. She's also not buying the whole concept. And Wesley smugly asks her, on an average day, how many people ask you about your friends? Bianca admits, a fair amount. And Wesley continues, okay, and on an average day, how many people ask you questions about you? Bianca stands there wordlessly. And Wesley continues, see, you friended up. Good for you. He hands her a drink, which she immediately dumps on him. And she leaves the motherfucking party.
Maybe everybody's asking Jess and Casey about Bianca. Huh, Wes? Have you ever thought about that? Because they're asking about each other's friends to the friends that aren't there. So maybe. Okay, I'm going to
try this still. I don't. I like where you're going with this. I don't think that's actually happening, though. But
yeah, it's probably not. But at the same time, like, it's not that she's, like, she is super hot, but she does not dress in scantily clad gear that shows off her assets. She's like, wearing my overalls and my flannel, don't give a fuck what you think.
Yeah.
So, like, I don't think she's a duff. Yeah. I don't think I've seen you in a flannel in quite some time, Corinne.
No, but, like, I mean, I really sympathized with this character because she's just uniquely who she is. And, you know, I was like, jeans and a graphic tee, and I'm still jeans and a graphic tee.
Yeah.
Now. And that's just who she is. And so, like, her friends are awesome, and they love her for who she is. And they're not trying to change her, and she's not trying to change her friends either.
No.
Like, they all kick ass and appreciate each other, and they're all awesome in their own ways, which is fantastic.
Oh, but that's about to change in the near future.
No!
Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert.
La, 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 la. The one thing that Bianca has that I don't have, other than the name of the real doll in Lars and the Real Girl, is she has like two friends to hang out with in high school. I didn't have anyone to hang out with in high school. So I was sadly being described later. I was my own Duff. So,
oh, I was my sister's Duff. Actually, no, I shouldn't say that. We all pretty much hung out in a group. Anywho, the first stage of Duff is denial. Bianca still doesn't think she's a Duff, and then she experiences Thursday at school. It's a day after the party, and Bianca is doing her lab work in science when Wesley prances up behind her asking, "What's up, Duffy?" Bianca is pissed at him. "You called me fat and ugly. Leave me alone."
Yeah.
Wesley denies this. "I could never call anyone fat or ugly. That's mean." Bianca grumpily pours substance from one test tube to another. Yeah, you did. She hisses, "Designated ugly fat friend. It's literally in the name." Wesley pish-poshes, "No, you don't have to be fat or ugly to be a Duff. It's just a label that's stuck. It's not meant to be taken word for word, literally, uh-huh, Wes, because she is not ugly or fat." Bianca's pissed. "Get out of here before I murder you." Wesley starts returning to his chair when he turns back around and asks over Bianca's shoulder, "Are you kidding?" And she quickly retorts, "I will murder you!" And he accepts defeat back at his desk. I think Bianca's got some anger issues, throwing the drink in his face and threatening to murder him. Just saying.
I think she's justified.
Okay. Well, she keeps being violent with him. This is not the only instance of violence on her part, so...
They instigate things with each other, so...
But he doesn't get physical with her, and she definitely gets physical with him. During lunch, she's chatting with Jess and Casey. They're sliding their cafeteria trays in front of different food stations when Elaine, a cafeteria lady, greets Jess and Casey warmly by their name before giving them their food. They leave to find a table, and Bianca greets the cafeteria lady by name. "Hi, Elaine!" Elaine looks at her blankly, blink, 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 and slaps a smile on her face. "Hey, you!" Bianca's not living in a fair or just world. After lunch, while the trio is walking to class, Principal Buchanan greets Jess and Casey. Bianca suddenly flashes on the jock with the homecoming flyers. Her Spanish teacher and Madison, all who addressed Jess and Casey but didn't acknowledge her. Bianca narrates, "Without Jess and Casey, I cease to exist. Holy shit, I am the Duff."
Later, when Bianca's at home, she goes through her Facebook photos looking for evidence of what she is now sure of. Bianca, you look hard enough for anything, you're gonna find it. She sees picture after picture of Jess and Casey looking like a matched pair, while she looks like a random person who just happens to be in their photo, including a childhood photo of Jess and Casey dressed up as Charlie's Angels, while Bianca made the bold decision to be Bosley. Bianca curses herself. "Why was I Bosley? There were three angels." And I say, because you wanted to be Bosley and you didn't want or feel comfortable looking like a girly angel. And that's okay. Because Bianca...
And besides, wasn't Bosley the boss?
Yes. He bossed those angels around. But he wasn't going on any of the adventures. So...
Yeah.
I'm like, give me that feathered hair, some like... orange suntan tights, some roller skates, and hot and short shorts and a tank top, and I will be ready to solve some mysteries too.
Yes.
But Bianca can't hear me. Instead, she bitterly narrates, "You know that moment in Batman when that guy falls in the vat of acid and becomes Joker? This was my vat of acid moment. My best friends made me the Duff. But did they? I ask, no. But
no." Shaking my head.
Same. Bianca continues. I'm like, misplaced anger, perhaps, much?
A little bit. Maybe why you're being so violent with Wesley, your neighbor.
Bianca continues. And that made me angry. Hulk smash.
Don't give a damn about my reputation. Ding, 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 ding.
Now, the second stage of Duff, anger. AKA Bianca blows shit up. Don't give a damn about my reputation. Plays stormily as an anger-flavored Bianca heads down the stairs. Why did I say anger-flavored?
That's kind of cool. I like it. She'd be like a cinnamon stick, you know? Those Jolly Rancher cinnamon sticks.
Yeah. Bianca heads down the stairs in her, I don't don't give a damn about anything clothes, which are probably her pajamas paired with some Crocs, wearing some Dayglo orange socks. It's a look.
I'll say.
Her mom observes, "You look crazy." And Bianca replies flatly, "Crazy, amazing," before stomping outside and peeling her car out of the driveway. When she pulls her hoopte across two parking spots in the school lot, she observes, "Even my car is a duff," as it's parked between Beamers and Volvos.
All the more reason to do an asshole parking job there, Bianca.
I know. I was like, you have a prime spot up front and you take two spots with your car? Uh-huh. High school parking is hard. Like, fuck that uh-huh. shit. But she don't give a damn about her reputation.
Or keeping any friends, apparently.
Spoiler.
Well, I'm just saying from the parking point of view right now.
Oh, okay. Okay.
But when she's in the library with Jess and Casey, Bianca ends up blowing up her friendship with the two of them. She gets irritated at Jess first and then Casey over them basically existing. And then she pulls them outside to the room to, quote unquote, talk. But what she really means is to, one, angrily ask them why they've used her as their duff. When they ask her what a duff is, she explains, and once they find out, they state how ridiculous that is. But Bianca doesn't care, because she moves on to step two. She shuts them down and unfriends them on all the social medias. Jess and Casey are upset and confused, but at least they have each other. Bianca, on the other hand, doesn't have any close friendships left to torch, so she's left to sit all by her lonesome at lunch, where she observes all the duffs within this different social hierarchies, including self-duffs for the loners.
That'd be me. Self-duff.
As it flashes to a girl sitting on the floor eating her lunch going, "I am my own best friend."
Which is totally like, that was me sitting on the floor, like eating my food.
Oh. She runs into Amazeballs Toby when she leaves the cafeteria and he compliments her on her socks. In her fantasies, she boldly says to him, "I want to make out with your face." And he happily consents and they kiss passionately. But sadly, that's just her fantasy. Instead, she says, socks. Gestures at him and walks off. Smooth, Bianca, smooth. And why do most adolescent crushes do something to your young brain that essentially shuts off functional speech? Happens to the best of us. That afternoon in science class, she comes upon the realization that the reason why she's never been able to talk to Toby is because he thinks she's a duff. And she subconsciously always realized she was one. Therefore, she lacked confidence. Bianca muses, "I wish I was like Wesley. He has the confidence to just go for it." And we see Wesley flirting with his lab partner, postulating to her what we do at ODK have spent some time thinking about, saying, "Well, I'm no wine expert, but I'm pretty sure rosé is just red and white wine blended." "But what the fuck is ice wine? What the fuck is ice wine?" The bell rings, and when Wesley gets up to leave, Mr. Fillmore has him stay after class. As the rest of the room empties out, Bianca slowly gathers her stuff to overhear Mr. Fillmore telling him that he's gotten 3 Fs and is currently suspended from the team until he gets his grades up. Wesley tries getting out of it, but the principal and his coach have agreed. Wesley's upset because if he loses his scholarship, he can't go to college. And the teacher helpfully states, "I'll get you a tutor and give you the opportunity for extra credit if you can demonstrate to me you know your stuff and do the extra work. We make things up because what's really important is what you end up learning." Nah, he doesn't say that. He says, "Well, you should have thought about that before." Super helpful, Mr. Fillmore.
Thanks, Mr. Fillmore.
Yeah. You're a peach. Uh-huh.
The third stage of duff, bargaining.
Oh.
Anyhow, during that conversation, Bianca's brain hamster got a churning on that wheel and ding, came up with an idea. So after school, when Wesley is throwing a football around on the field, Bianca approaches him. "I'm tired of being the duff. I want to be the dateable one." Wesley basically ignores her and starts jogging on the track. Bianca follows, jogging alongside him. "There's this guy I like, and whenever I'm around him, I can't get any words out and end up making an ass out of myself. But you never seem to have this problem." Wesley is confused. "Don't you hate me?" Bianca agrees. "I'm glad you asked. Yes, I do. But only because you're a dipshit and a man whore. However, you're also the only person in this whole school who told me what was going on. So you're an honest dipshit, and that's what counts." She pokes him emphatically in the bicep. Wesley grimaces. "Thanks." Bianca has had enough of the jogging and begs, can we just stop and talk this out for a few moments? He obliges her and she says, so here's my proposition. You help me and I will get you to pass science. He shakes his head. I don't know. You got the easy part. You can pass science in your sleep. I've got to reverse duffify you. And all I've got to say,
fuck you.
Seriously, all I got to say, Tamara says it, fuck you, yes, is Wesley, you can't pass science in your sleep, so fuck off.
And also, he's got the equivalent of Lainey Boggs that he has to unduffify. Like, she's already a pretty hot piece of ass that's got her shit together, and she's got a cool personality. Like, you're golden, bro. You're golden. You're a dumbass, and she has to teach you science. Yay, learning.
Math is hard. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Wesley gestures towards her outfit. Are you wearing pajamas? And Bianca loses it. I get it. I'm a monster, a regular swamp thing, Bela Lugosi. Just forget it. Have fun playing intramural wee golf this season, dick face. Bianca starts walking swiftly off, and Wesley calls after her. Wait, 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 wait. Bianca returns, and he confesses. I'm an idiot, and idiots don't always say the best things. I'm sorry. I'll do it, but on one condition. You gotta ask me in monster voice. Bianca balks. And I have a theory that this is why Tam rearranged all of the sections so that I would have to do monster voice.
That, and I am getting over another cold. Why, I don't know. My immune system must be shot to shit. And if I tried doing the monster voice, I would fall into peels of coffee. So...
Bianca balks. Like, from when we were little? I don't even remember it. Wesley says, okay, and starts to walk off. Quickly, Bianca calls after him.
Whoa, 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 whoa!
And he quickly returns with a look of smug delight on his face.
Bianca need Wesley help. Please help Bianca.
Wesley chuckles. Not bad. You still got it? And with the monster voice ask that Bianca did, it's a deal. Bianca says she'll start getting him ready for the chemistry midterm, while he says that they should meet at the mall on Saturday at noon. Dun, 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 dun.
What's going to happen at the mall, you ask? They're going to share a pretzel.
Ooh.
They're going to do some karaoke. They're going to get their teeth whitened.
Ooh.
No. Next thing we know, we're in the mall and Bianca's holding a tiny thong and looking at Wes dubiously. Really? If I wanted to go shopping, I could have gone with Jess and Casey. I need real talk. Wesley shrugs. Okay, real talk. You've got a uniboob. Your posture sucks and your clothes fit weird because you're wearing the wrong size bra. Boom. Real talk. I watch a lot of Project One Ray. What's up? He continues. Now, first impressions matter, so you have to take some pride in your appearance. He calls over some women who work in the lingerie section, and the two women immediately pull out the pink tape measure, talking to each other. Ooh, uniboob and see uniboob. And Wesley hoofs it out of the underwear section. After she got the girl separated and lifted with the sweet new bra, she finds Wesley in the women's clothing section, and he thrusts a pile of clothes into her arm. Now, no one can tell who you are by what you're wearing, so we have to represent that better and get you looking less like Wreck-It Ralph.
But I like looking like Wreck-It Ralph. It's my thing.
He says this to the overall clad Bianca, who has her red flannel tied around her waist. Bianca heads off to the dressing rooms and Wesley follows her. However, what neither of them notice is Madison's videographer bestie Caitlin, who sees the two of them together. Bianca tries on a variety of floral monstrosities with equally bad accessories, and then she notices Wesley recording her with his phone. He insists it's important to document things so we can review the footage, like football. And she threatens him. If anyone sees this footage, I will rip your nutsack off. Wesley got the message, but also lets her know, that's fine, but it's important that you trust me. And I have three words for you, Wesley. Trust is earned. Bianca goes on to try on the outfits and does a full-on flirty montage and all the ridiculousness and tries to make each outfit work. They're having a good time, but hiding behind the rack of clothes with their camera out is Caitlin. Boo. Ooh. Boo. This does not bode well. After Bianca fills up a mannequin, calling out to it, oh, Toby, you're so bad. She knocks off the arm and uses it to feel herself up and cop a mannequin boob squeeze. But she gets a little overzealous and accidentally knocks off over the whole thing. So Bianca and Wesley get the fuck out of there. Are they any closer to narrowing down her personal style? I have no idea.
Meanwhile, Madison receives a message from Caitlin about Wesley and Bianca being together, and she's pissed. Wesley and Bianca are heading out of the department store, and Bianca stops for a moment, eyeing a mannequin in a black dress longingly. Wesley suggests that she try it on, the dress, not the mannequin. But she says she's tired, maybe later, and instead they go to the food court. However, Bianca has not avoided the hard work of the unduffifying process. Wesley initially has her ask out a guy in an Argyle sweater who is eating a hot dog, who thinks she's part of a prank show. Then Wesley follows up by having her talk to 15 guys. Things initially are going terribly, but she starts getting the hang of it and actually gets hit on by a super friendly toppings consultant from the frozen yogurt place. After that is done, Bianca meets up with Wesley, who is sitting in a Brookstone massage chair, and Bianca has a triumphant conversation with him, which concludes with her handing off her chemistry notes to him.
Not before she gets a personal massager and starts going in her back going, I deserve a little treat for myself. And I'm like, honey, that's not what you do with that personal massager. You're not supposed to put it on your shoulders.
Oh, it's a high school movie. High school movie.
Oh, sorry. Sorry. Well, why do you think Wesley was smiling so much in that chair? The vibrating chair. Give him a little nutsack a jiggle.
Oh
yeah.
You know, you got to keep it jiggling. Just got to make sure everything's moving down there, you know.
Uh-huh.
Moving and
yeah, grooving. Exactly what. Yep. So just, you want to put that little massager down lower. See what moves and grooves for you, girlfriend. Maybe then you don't need Wes or Toby. Ugh. Just saying.
Toby.
We're not there yet. You can't.
No. But I will. I'm going to say with the information that we already have, I prefer Wes because he seems kind of like who he is up front. Whereas Toby, he's got his like, I've got my big magnet guitar out to like catch all the ladies. Whoosh. Look at my hair. Move.
I think you're disgruntled because those were the guys you liked in high school. You love the Tobys and you were sorely mistaken by what kind of guys they actually are, which were predominantly a-holes. Because we went to a coffee place and there was a guy that walked in when we were at the Hexagon house and you were like, oh my God, I totally would have had a crush on that guy. And if I recall correctly, he kind of looked like a Toby type.
Eh, sure. I will admit, I mean, Toby kind of looks like a River Phoenix. So, yes. Yeah.
I didn't want to say it, but since you went there, yes.
Mind you, River Phoenix, way cuter, way smarter, way more interesting, and probably used way more drugs than Toby. But.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would say that's a given since he died from an overdose. Rest in peace.
Yes. Oh. I agree with you, mm-hmm. And I see their game now. I see their game.
That is why you're having such a knee-jerk reaction to Toby. You're like, fuck, Toby. I'm like, he hasn't done anything yet. He will, but he hasn't done anything yet.
I'm like, he has played his guitar with a circle of ladies around him. He's done enough.
Damn, I see you with your circle of ladies.
So... after the erotic massages that Wesley and Bianca may or may not have had, Bianca hands her chemistry notes to him. She says, live by my notes and you will succeed. He flips through it, looking at all the sciencey words dubiously, and I think he's about to ask for actual tutoring help from her when Madison and Caitlin approach them. Madison, not surprisingly, acts like a bully and has Caitlin take a picture of Wesley and Bianca together. After the devious duo walks off, Wesley and Bianca swiftly part ways, each giving excuses of having to be somewhere else, anywhere else.
Did that picture of them ever come back?
Nope, it did not.
I didn't think so. But I was like, what was the purpose of that picture?
You know, Madison has a file that she like keeps things in for, you know, future use.
Yes, but I'm like, what could you possibly use this for? I know what she uses other things for, but I'm like, your ex is with a girl and you taking a picture of it to document this moment for posterity. Yeah, that's, I'm just saying, not the best idea, I don't think.
It's one of two things. One, humiliate Wesley by like sharing it and being like, look at what a dog he's hanging out with. Or two, humiliate Bianca by saying, oh, look, she thinks she's going to get him. Ha ha, loser girl.
Okay. I'm just going to file that away for later, along with all of Madison's photographs.
As somebody who has been bullied extensively, I understand how this all works. After a successful weekend hitting and getting hit on, reality hurts. While walking into school, Bianca sees her former besties. One tentatively waves, but Bianca turns tail with a fuck right off look on her face. As she's walking away, in a huff, her phone pings. She clicks on the link and her face falls. What does she see? Find out with us after the break. And we're back. On Monday, when Bianca starts walking those sacred high school halls, she notices everyone looking and pointing and laughing at her. And then her phone dings. She sees it. A video of her making out with mannequin Toby with a little flourish added. There is a caption above it that reads, Duff Love, along with some more unsavory commentary about her ass. The video ends with her whispering sweet nothings to a decapitated mannequin head. Bianca hisses at her phone, Wes, curse your sudden but inevitable betrayal! But thanks her lucky stars that there's only 6 views for now. It only takes a couple of hours for that video to go viral. Everybody in the school sees it eventually. And by the end of the day, it has over 20,000 views. And as Bianca makes her way down the class hallway, everyone is laughing at her. While Madison and Caitlin high-five each other, Bianca hides out in the bathroom stall only to overhear 2 classmates talk about how embarrassing the school year is going to be for Toby, since he is the object of Bianca's affection in the video. Ew.
That poor baby. Oh my god, is he going to be okay?
I think his hair is going to be like turn more brown and less blondy.
Oh my god, it's going to lose its illustrious glow and get oily.
Yes.
Oh my god, don't say that.
Toby, we love you and we have your back, okay?
Toby!
Across campus, Jess and Casey are sitting in the yearbook computer room and have also seen the notorious video. Casey thinks Bianca is getting what's due to her. She's the one that broke it off with us. But Jess still implores her friend to take the video down, which she does. Thanks, Hacker Casey.
Yeah, seriously, I need a Hacker Casey in my life. And yet on another corner of the campus, Mr. Arthur and Principal Buchanan are also getting a glimpse of the Toby Love-a-thon. They contemplate what to do, but the video zaps off, thanks to Casey. Mr. Arthur thinks that solves the problem, but the principal is livid. This travesty cannot go unchecked. Mr. Arthur offers, so let's do this delicately and in private. But the principal needs to set an example for these cyberbullies, these YOLO bandits. Ho-ho. The next day, he puts a ban on all cell phones. He announces over the intercom that during class hours, all students must surrender their cells to their teachers and retrieve them at the end of the day. But this was a poorly thought out plan, because next we see the principal in his office surrounded by hundreds of phones, which are all simultaneously ringtoning, ringing and pinging and singing, I like big butts and I cannot lie. You other brothers can't deny. When a bro walks in with an itty bitty waist and a round thing in your face, you'll get sprung.
Yeah.
And just how are they going to get all of the phones back to the students? And how can they trust them all? Because I might see that new iPhone and be like, oh, I just might need an upgrade. My Samsung 4 is looking pretty sad compared to this new iPhone.
The new iPhone?
iPhone. The new iPhone. It's not even like out yet because it's so new. You don't even say iPhone. You say iPhone. Because it's got like a little umlaut over the I.
Oh, it's got a little umlaut. Okay.
So, to add insult to injury, not only is Bianca the most famous duff in the school now, everyone knows she's the reason why they don't have phones. She gets heckled, yet again, walking down the hall by her pissed peers. She finally finds Wes and asks him, what the fuck, is this another lesson or something? One of Wes's teammates brings over a CPR dummy and asks Bianca if she'd like a round with Toby too. He starts simulating a makeout scene while she looks at Wes and asks, "Are you gonna do anything?" He pauses for a moment and tells her, "Your boobs look good. Did you get a new bra?" And she responds by flipping his lunch tray into his lap and walking away. That is the physical.
She didn't physical hurt violence him with the with by flipping the lunch tray into his lap.
Oh, still. I remember one time I was a very angry teen in my sophomore year and was sitting in art class, and two guys kept writing on my shirt, supposedly writing on my shirt. I just felt the pen, mm-hmm. and I kept turning around being like, "Stop."
Yeah.
And I turned back around and they'd write on it again. And I turned around, "Stop." And the teacher was a puss. He didn't do shit about it. He saw what was going on, was just like, doo, 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 sitting at my desk, not doing anything. And finally, like the third time when they didn't stop, I hauled off and slapped one of the guys.
Nice.
And yeah, no, he got up and he's like, "What the fuck? Don't think I won't fucking hit a girl. I will fucking hit a girl right here." And I was like, doo, 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 doo. I just like sunk back into my chair and I was like, I did not think that through. And the teacher still didn't fucking do anything. He like watched the whole thing and went back to his paperwork. And I was like, you fucking asshole.
Oh my gosh. We both had like interesting / bad repercussion anger management moments.
See?
During summer school, I was taking geometry. It was a lot of fun. And there was a guy in the class who was pestering me, and I was telling him to leave me alone. He just kept on bugging me, kept on bugging me. And so I gave him a little pushy-push, and I had a mechanical pencil in my hand that had a metal tip. So it ended up scratching him. I didn't mean to, like, stab him with a mechanical pencil. It just happened to be in my hand. And he told his brother about it, who was a gang member, and his brother started like trying to come after me and was threatening me, and he was trying to get his girl cousin to beat me up because he was a guy, because code, right? He was a guy, so it wasn't appropriate for him to beat me up.
Oh, I don't know.
He needed her to come and beat me up.
Apparently that didn't apply at my high school.
She told me she wasn't going to beat me up. And I was like, dude, call your brother off, like to the guy that I gave a little push to, because he wasn't a bad guy. You know, he was just being pesky. And he's like, I'm sorry, I did not like realize the whole chain of events that would unfold.
That escalated quickly.
Yes. There was like a week or two where I was like climbing over fences to go home instead of walking my regular way back home. Because I was like, I don't want to get beat up.
And in my scenario, my friend who was sitting behind me, it was my friend that I talked to and was cool with, and his friend, who's the one I slapped, that like came after me. He told me a couple of weeks later, he goes, "That was me. I was the one writing on your shirt, but I wasn't writing on your shirt. My pen cap was on. I was just messing with you. Yeah. I'm sorry." So like my anger was misdirected at somebody else. And then after that, I'm like, oh, I got to simmer down now. I got to simmer down now. So it was just like, oh, Lord. I knew I had anger problems, and I'm just saying, like, Bianca, I see you, girl. I see you. Did I hurt that guy when I slapped him? Absolutely not. Did he see fit to still, like, threaten me? Sure did.
Your friend was not doing you any favors. Bad friend. Bad friend.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I wish I'd had my yearbook so I could remember, like, all of those, put names with the faces to all those stories, but gosh darn, it's just a haze of, a foggy haze of people's sort of features, but I don't know who anybody is anymore. If I did, I'd have a lot of apologies to give because I was angry. Anyways.
You and me both. You and me both.
Yes. Later that afternoon, Bianca's in her room reflecting on the craptastic day when there's a knock on her door. It's Wes. He apologizes to her for the afternoon and she promptly socks him in the nose. I did talk to text, so I was talking out this part and it was writing it out on my iPad, and instead of saying promptly socks him in the nose, it's interpreted as probably sucks him in the nose, which I thought was worth mentioning. Anyways, anger management. He shakes it off and asks to come in, and she lets him. And inside her kitchen, he grabs a bag of peas and puts it on her fist and swears that he did not send the video. The angles were all wrong, and he overheard Madison and Caitlin bragging about it. Bianca notices his knuckles look just as bruised and asks him about it. And he tells her he was passing out a little vigilante justice and threatening anyone in the school not to share the Duff Love video. Bianca's touched and shares her frozen peas, putting it on his fist, while Tamra wonders why couldn't he just stand up in front of all of his bros instead of being a cavalier guy behind closed doors. Mm-hmm. Huh? Mm-hmm. But she says, I've never had anyone go on a punching spree for me before. And Wes lets her know that now everybody thinks he's on roids. Aren't you, though? He goes to his bag and pulls out the black dress from the mall as a peace offering and tells her he never should have called her the Duff. She's thrilled but doesn't know what to do about Toby. She tells Wes how she saw him today and it was weird. She's contemplating writing him a long letter and sending him an edible arrangement.
That's going to make things not weird at all. Writing him a long letter and sending him an edible arrangement. Yeah, totally wouldn't make things worse.
Okay, well, I mean, remember how much we liked getting stuff in school, like balloons and fucking flowers and shit? If I got an edible arrangement, I'd be like, score! Maybe without the long letter, but I'd be pretty stoked to get a basket full of fruit.
If you got an edible arrangement from the guy who made a totally stalkery make out with a mannequin video of you, you'd be like, okay, I loves me an edible arrangement, but do I really want anything from this guy? Question mark, question yes. mark, question mark.
The fruit. I want the fruit. That doesn't mean I'm accepting or agreeing to any sort of obligation. I'm just enjoying the edible arrangement.
I will tell you that of arrangements, I would not mind an edible one. Those yes. always look delicious. And my cousin sent my parents one after my sister died, and I was jealous. I was like, you just sent me flowers. Where's my edible arrangement, man? I want an edible arrangement.
And to clarify, also, in my high school at Piedmont Hills, like, we were shuffling our lunch tickets that we all got for low-income families back and forth, like playing cards. So if I came in with an edible arrangement, I'd be the fucking bomb of my friend group.
That's true. 100%.
I could probably even be like, this came from that weirdo guy that made that crazy video about me. They'd be like, oh, girl, can I have a pineapple?
Uh-huh. Point. Total point.
Thank you.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Wes tells her, do not send that letter in edible arrangement because apparently her life is much different from mine. Just go own your shit. Go up to him. Tell him the video sucked, but I'm into you. And on that advice, he leaves off to study Hess's law and how it relates to emphatic chemical change. He's been using her notes.
Aw. The next day, Bianca finds Toby and cuts to the chase. She takes Wes's advice and says, so I'm guessing you've seen the video? He smiles warmly and says, yes. She continues, okay, well, I do actually like you and was wondering if you're interested in hanging out. He responds, like, pretty receptively. You know, this is the most we've ever talked, and sure, I'd love to hang out. How about we meet up at my house? You available Friday? She pretends to check her calendar and chuckles, saying, yeah, I think I can make it. As he's walking away, she spreads out her arms triumphantly and is flanked by doves and fireworks that only we and Bianca can see. But then she realizes, shit, she doesn't know how the fuck to act on a first date and races to the boys' locker room to find Wes, her boy whisperer. Once she's inside, she's confronted by a bunch of half-naked guys. They all balk at her presence, and she coolly says, oh, is this embarrassing for you? Now you know how it feels. She finds Wes and tells him she needs to talk to him ASAP. But he's gonna fuck with her a little bit first and makes her talk to his dancing pecs before he agrees to go somewhere more private. They go to the equipment room, and he is impressed as she tells him that she asked Toby out, but she's never actually been on a date. He tells her to sit down and excitedly gets the coach's chalkboard so they can work out a date game plan. Wesley asks, where are you thinking of going? Bianca responds, somewhere unique, hipster. Wesley cuts her off. Great, Dave and Buster's. Now, you're going to want a dim booth. That's ideal for accidental touching and eventually making out. As he's verbally telling her this game plan, he's excitedly putting X's and O's and squares on the board. He coaches on, then pay attention to the body language. If he's leaning in and trying to impress you, chances are he's into you. His lines and circles ultimately make a huge penis shape. Because, of course. which is the end of the lesson and something Wes has always wanted to do, draw a huge dick on his coach's chalkboard.
Yeah. Mission accomplished.
After her meeting with Wesley, Bianca is approached by Mr. Arthur. Her classmates are still ribbing her for being the Duff. So when she hears, "Hey, Bianca," from where she's hiding her head in her locker, she quickly pulls her head out of her locker, slamming the door and telling the voice to eat a dick. She glances up and quickly backpedals. "Mr. Arthur, I'm really sorry." But Mr. Arthur good-naturedly says, "No, thanks. I just had a bagel, so I'm full." They walk and talk, and he says, "Teachers aren't supposed to have favorite students, but you're mine." He reminds her, "Teachers definitely have favorite students. Are you kidding me?" He reminds her that the pen is mightier than the sword, and her homecoming article will give her a chance to transcend everything that's going on. She protests emphatically. She doesn't want to go someplace where everybody hates her, but Mr. Arthur insists, "I picked you for a reason, and whatever you write is our lead, so inspire us. The pen is mightier than the sword." He leaves her in the hall and heads to his classroom.
Later that day, Bianca goes to Wes's house for their tutoring session. At the door, she can hear his parents arguing loudly. He comes out in a mood, and she asks if he'd like to talk about it when they get in the car. He does not, and just responds with, "See why I need a scholarship? So many questions. They're going to study. Why don't they just study at Bianca's house?"
I was wondering the same thing.
Because when they get into her car, they drive out to a remote forest trail where there is no study books or notes to be seen. Wes is confused and asks, "Is this where you're going to murder me?" But no, she's taking him to her special place, which is a rock, and it's flat. She sits on it. It's her think rock. He joins her and asks what they're supposed to do there. She nods knowingly and says, "Think." He chuckles and asks how she found this place. She tells him her dog Pepper would always beeline straight to the rock whenever she walked with her there. Wes remembers Pepper and asks, "How is she?" Bianca said sadly, "No, I think she's fine. And it was kind of unusual that my mom wanted me in the custody battle and Dad wanted Pepper." Wes tells her that's rough. And she asks if his parents are getting a divorce. He surprisingly says, "God, I hope so." And they sit and console each other, which ultimately turns into a mini makeout session where Wes kisses Bianca full on the mouth. It only lasts for a few seconds before they break away awkwardly and he apologizes, try to play it off like, "That was part 8 of the plan, you know, in case you haven't made out in a while." She's dubious. A gorilla makeout session? Really? And then critiques his kiss. He's taken aback. "That's how girls like to be kissed," he argues, but she disagrees and wants to show him how it's supposed to be done. She makes him close his eyes and lean in. He rushes in to kiss her, but she tells him, "Slow, slow, let the tension build." The kiss tractor beam turns on as they move towards each other. The tension's definitely building, and as their lips almost touch, Bianca takes a quick left and licks the entire side of Wes's face.
She commits with that
tongue. They both laugh. Yes, she does. He has to get a towel after that. They both laugh and he jokingly says, "Ugh, you're a phenomenal kisser." She asks if that made him feel better. And it did. So they leave the rock because they have a date with chemistry. So why did they even go there? Nobody knows.
Wesley needed a moment to recenter his chi. He was not going to be any good for studying after all the chaos of his parents.
Oh, recenter his chi. So one of his chakras must have been in his cheek that she tongued up and down. Right? I get it.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Reset the chakra by licking the chi.
On the thinking rock. Yes.
Okay. Get it?
By licking the chi. Yes.
I'm sorry. I'm not sure if you heard that chi.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
all right. Yeah. Moving on.
Uh-huh. Funny, Tam. It was hilarious.
I know. That's why I was waiting for you to laugh. So heartfelt.
Thank you.
As they head up the trail, Bianca's voiceover says, "Do you know how the hills have eyes? Well, sometimes the bushes have bitches." Because Madison's little lackey, Caitlin, is once again in the right place behind a bush, filming the whole goddamn thing with her camera. Ooh. Seriously, does Caitlin have a goddamn tracker on these two? Because how the hell does she keep popping up in those places unless she's fucking stalking the shit out of them?
Like I said, you don't need security cameras when Caitlin's around. She's just going to be like recording the shit out of everything. Woof.
Mm-hmm.
The next day at school, Bianca is confronted by Madison, who snarkily shows her another video that she's made. It's all of the guys Bianca has attempted to talk to at the mall, with the focus on all of her rejections. Madison tells her, "I'm calling it mall whore, or just slut whore. But regardless, this video will destroy you." Bianca is confused. "What do you want from me?" Madison practically snarls. "I know about you making out with Wesley, but he's getting back together with me, and I don't like people thinking he'd be with someone like you. You may think high school won't matter later, but it will always matter, and I'm here to make the most of it."
Not won't. I'm here to say no, no. No, it does not, gentle listeners. If any of you are in high school, that is wrong. Wrong.
Wrong. Very wrong.
I have blacked out 75% of my high school memories, so best believe those twitch don't have any effect on me today, twitch.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, no. High school, middle school, all that bullshit, doesn't matter. Life gets better when you get older. Promises. Good promises, though. Oof. With a toss of her hair, Madison walks off. Bianca thinks to herself, "I don't even think of Wes like that." Cut to her brain playing a very bad 70s style porno between her, the lonely housewife, and Wes, the pizza delivery pool boy. Porn Bianca sits on a bed reading the history of pizza with her big hair, glitter eyeshadow, and leopard negligee on, stating, "I'm horny for sex." Suddenly, the door opens and Wesley comes through it in a pair of Speedos, wearing a football helmet, and in one hand holding a pool sweeping net, and in the other hand holding a box of pizza. He asks, "Hey, someone's pool need cleaning? Winky winky. Also, I brought pizza and I like to have sex." He tosses the pizza box aside, whips off his helmet, and looks into the camera, stating, "With girls." Sexy Bianca pops off the bed, moving towards him. "I'm a girl." He looks at her with hungry eyes. And they do really bad open mouth mashy kissing as 70s porn music plays in the background.
Is that your 70s porn music?
Yes, that's my 70s porn music. Thank you very much.
It felt like it was a bad version of Macarena. Bucka, 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 bucka. Hey, Macarena. Bucka, 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 bucka. Ba, chicka, ba, ba. That's better. Bucka, yeah, bucka, bucka, that's better. Bucka, 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 ba, chicka, ba, ba. Now you sound like a chicken.
Well, you know, part of Free to Be You and Me was inspired by Gonzo, and he has Camilla, his chicken, and the chicken choir. So, you know, maybe the chickens are singing the 70s porn music. How about that?
Way to bring it back around, Corinne. Way to bring it back around.
It's all part of the...
circles back. It all circles back.
It's all connected. It goes all the way to the top.
Your eyes are getting a little crazy there.
Just because you don't believe in my conspiracy theories don't mean they're not real. Okay.
Okay.
Bianca snaps back to reality, realizing that maybe she could imagine having sex with Wes, but she has to keep focused on Toby. Uh-huh. Keep those eyes on the prize. Friday night comes, and it's time for her date. She puts on the black dress and is surprised. She thought there'd be some sort of magic transformation, but it just looks like her in a dress. She goes downstairs, and her mom is also heading out for her date. Bianca's mom tries to pep talk her with self-help mumbo jumbo. Believe, retrieve, achieve, aka BRA. Great acronym there. But Bianca was looking for a real conversation with her mom, not a motivational talk from Dottie Piper, motivational speaker. Outside, Wes is waiting for her. He just happened to be there, waiting on a stranger to pass by so he could show them that he got a B on his science paper. Yay! He notices she's wearing the dress he got her. "You look good, but not like you." Bianca asks, "Excuse me?" He replies, "You look great. Have a good time." But there's a certain lack of enthusiasm behind his words. Bianca tells him, "You're being weird." He covers it by saying, "You're being weird." So He wishes her luck and they part ways. She gets to Toby's house and he answers the door. She asks where he wants to go out to dinner, and he thought they could stay in. He made a crap ton of sushi for the occasion. And I was thinking, really? Did he make a crap ton of sushi? Or if she goes into the kitchen, is she going to see like little sushi trays all over the place? Is what I was like. This is what I was thinking when I saw that. Okay. Okay.
He said that he made it himself because he's very good with his hands, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. I'm good with my hands.
Mm-hmm. He's good with caca. I mean, lying, full of shit. Yes.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. I was like, was there caca in sushi? I didn't see that on the plate. Gotcha.
No. The sushi looked wonderful, and I thought that you were probably going to be very sad when it gets dumped onto the floor.
I was. How did you know?
So he made a crap ton of sushi for the kid. He leads her into the dining room where the table is set nicely and goes to get the food. She's panicked. She's only trained for Dave and Buster's and noticed the chairs are across the table from each other. She quickly tries to shove her seat next to Toby's. She flips off the lights for mood lighting, but it's too dark. And Toby thinks they blew a fuse, and so she swipes them back on. Oops, must have accidentally turned them off looking at this picture of you. Over dinner, Toby's being sweet, leaning in and trying to impress her. She fantasizes about Toby pushing all the food off the table.
No! Not the sushi!
I heard Tamara's cries at 1 in the morning when she was
all
watching
the way from
this.
LA.
I'm surprised you didn't wake up Larry. Larry's like, what? Is everything okay?
Like, who said I didn't?
The surgery!
The reverberations echo through all my loved ones because they know how I feel about wasting food, especially expensive food, a.k.a. a butt ton of sushi.
Your sister, like, suddenly bolts up in bed, like, wide awake. I feel a disturbance in the forest.
Is my sister okay?
Yeah.
Is she okay? I have to call her.
So Bianca fantasizes about Toby pushing all the food off the table and taking her on the table until Toby is replaced by Wesley in her fantasies. What the fuck? She snaps back to reality, but Wesley's dating, advice-giving spirit keeps popping up throughout the evening and distracting her.
He's telling her, how the fuck did you push all that sushi off the floor? Mm-hmm. Even though that didn't really happen, he felt my reverberations too. Bianca goes to the bathroom and tries to slap some sense into herself. You are not into Wes, she says to her reflection. She regains her composure and meets her crush out on the patio so he can sing her a song on his guitar. She looks a little cold outside, so he puts his sweater around her shoulders and strums his guitar and plays her a mediocre tune. Afterwards, they talk about the video. Bianca shares that she's pretty much over, but the thing that stung the most was she lost her friends. Toby quickly adds, oh, Jess and Casey? Bianca's surprised that he knows them, and he explains, yeah, I have acting class with Jess and trigonometry with Casey. He starts waxing poetic about how fantastic and powerful they are, and then asks seriously, is it intimidating, you know, being friends with them?
Ugh.
Bianca has a realization that she's being motherfucking duffed by Toby and confronts him. Are you duffing me because you're trying to get to my friends and I'm approachable? He admits that he thought Jess and Casey were coming with her, and if they have dates to homecoming. Bianca goes through a plethora of emotions in her head that only we can see. She screams, ah! She cries, ah! She vomits, blip, and then she leaves in a huff. Before she walks away, Toby stops her. Wait, wait, Bianca! She turns around, but all he wants is his sweater back. She takes it off and tosses it in a nearby trash can, and inside she notices a Mr. Sushi takeout bag and holds it in front of him accusingly. He shrugs and offers, well, the song was mine. She's not surprised because it was a piece of crap, and so is he. As she's walking to her car, she tries calling Wes, but he's not answering. So she leaves a message for him to call her back immediately. She needs to talk to him. Okay, few things about Toby. Is he thick in the head because A, she made a video about him, B, she told him that she's into him, and C, he asked her on a date, and then all of a sudden Casey and Jess come into the mix, and he was like, oh, I thought you were saying that they were into me. When, Toby? When did you get that idea?
Not that they were into him, that they were going to come along with her, because obviously they come along with her.
No. I didn't put it in the notes, but he's like, well, I thought you were just implying that they were into me. Like, he literally says that. And I'm like, fucking when, Toby? And honestly, I hate how every single guy in this movie will interchange Jess and Casey. Like, they're just the hot girls. Like,
yeah.
I could take Jess or Casey, whatever. Put in a bag, mix them up. Whichever one comes out first is the one I'll bang until I need a helmet.
Oh, that's why I always carry a helmet around with me. Just in case I ever cross paths with Jess or Casey.
But it doesn't matter which.
Nope. Totally interchangeable. I mean, if you think about it, they're kind of... Oh my gosh. Jess, Casey, and Bianca. JC. Jesus Christ. Holy Trinity. Three of them. Wait, what? Tamara's looking at me like, have you lost your goddamn ever-loving mind?
I'm waiting for this to circle back and make sense. That's what this expression on my face is saying. Go ahead. Jesus Christ, Trinity. Uh-huh. Continue.
They're the holy objective.
Not nothing else? Okay.
And might as well be the same thing. Ta-da!
Okay, but what are your thoughts about Toby?
Toby's an asshat. And son of- I felt like it all rung really true when I schedule people at work sometimes.
Oh.
They have a date that they want. And I say to them, you can't have that date. It is not available. I can give you this date and time. And they say, okay, I'll take that date and time. And then they put the date that they want in their calendar.
Oh, okay.
And
that's not cool.
And this is like, because they just really want the date and time that they want. And this is like a Toby. Toby's like, so what you're saying by like, you're going to come over on Friday is that I'm going to have the three of you over at once, right? You and your friends, right? Huh? Winky, winky.
So then why wasn't he the slightest bit disappointed when it was just her? Like, he played it off real, real good. Anyways.
I think he was expecting them to just like, you know, show up at some point in time. I'm surprised he didn't ask. So, like, are your friends coming?
Yeah.
But I think he was keeping it a secret inside of himself because he sounded disappointed.
Like, maybe if we go outside on the patio and I'm playing my guitar, my music will draw them to me.
Oh, it's like the Pied Piper of hot girls. Oh.
Which hot girls? We don't care, any of them. Doesn't matter.
Jess, Casey, Jess. They're all the same, right?
Maybe Madison will even show up. Holy jeez. Am I that good? Can my siren song draw in Madison?
Do we want our siren song to draw in Madison? I mean, Casey and Jess, they're awesome. Madison!
Right, but it doesn't seem like these guys are very discerning.
Oh, no. I completely agree with you.
Even the gay guys want to do Madison. You said so yourself.
I did. Mm-hmm. But I won't like it, he says.
Yeah, yes, he does. Bianca tries to go to Think Rock, but much to her dismay, Wes is already there making out with Madison. That's why she didn't follow Toby's siren song.
Cursor said, but inevitable betrayal. I would be so pissed if he brought a chick out there to like to make out with. Oh, fuck no.
Yeah. Hey, don't get any jizz on my special, special place, you fuck.
Seriously, on my special, special place? If you use a condom, you don't have to worry about that, Tamara.
I'm just thinking about Think Rock. Wow. Obviously, Bianca's very upset. She goes home to lick her wounds, but after a while is interrupted by a knock on the door. It's Wes. He apologizes that she had such a craptastic date, and she lays into him for using her rock as a Motel 6.
Mm-hmm.
He reminds her that she was just out on a date and doesn't understand why she's upset. We're friends, right? She disagrees. People like us aren't friends, and asks him to please go home. Next, we get a montage of the weekend and her attempting to write the article on homecoming. She's half-assing it because she doesn't care for the subject matter, and mostly because she really misses her friends. Cut to Bianca sitting in her room, finally being real with Jess and Casey. They're surprised at all of this drama spurred from one little word, but Jess tells Bianca, we all have our insecurities, and besides, you're the smart one, so you have one up on us. They finally make up, and the besties decide to ditch their dates and hang out for the night. Bianca will not let them do that because it's homecoming, but Jess and Casey insist. They are all hanging out together at homecoming. You are coming with us. Mm-hmm. She tries to protest when her mom storms in. She was listening at the door yet again and has some motherly wisdom. Bianca shakes her head and tells her she's already at the fifth stage, acceptance. The fifth stage of duffness, acceptance. But mom realizes her daughter needs her, not just her motivational advice. She can get that from the book if she wants to. Mom tells Bianca to accept who she is and embrace it.
I love it. She says, be the best weirdo you can be. Turn it up to 11.
Yes. You spent so much time focusing on what other people think, you haven't had time to be yourself. She tells her, you're a big weirdo. Just be the best damn weirdo you can be and kick ass at the homecoming dance.
Yeah.
The pep talk works. And Bianca gets an idea. She goes to the closet and pulls out the black dress and her favorite red flannel. She utilizes her bestie's fashion design skills, and together they create the most Bianca-esque dress. They all admire it, and even Mom says, fucking A, when she sees it.
Yay! My only critique of her outfit is that she's wearing heels when I think that she should be wearing docks with it.
Nah, she looks awesome in the heels, and they're chunky heels, and they look comfortable.
They don't look comfortable to me at all. Cut to the homecoming dance. Ding, 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 ding. Jess, Casey, and Bianca make their entrance together. People are giving Bianca compliments on her dress, which is the modified black dress. It has now had, it previously had long sleeves. It's now sleeveless, and the top bodice part is crafted out of her red flannel.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest is like a short mini body con dress, whatever. When Wesley sees Bianca, he starts singing, take my breath away, as he stands next to the punch bowl. But for Bianca...
Or Lady in Red is
nice!
Dancing with me.
Yes! But for Bianca, everything falls away when she sees Wes. Bianca steps away from Jess and Casey to say hi to him. As she approaches him, Toby tries to talk to Bianca, but she waves him away. Too late, buddy. Tamara says, I say, too late, asshole. She gives Wes the cheesy line that he told her to use when picking up guys at the mall. I could tell from across the room that we might be into each other. Now that I'm here, I'm sure. Your move. She chuckles and asks him if that worked for him. He admits, it was pretty good. And wow, you look beautiful. Bianca divulges, the other night I was wrong. We're friends, but I also have feelings for you, and a smart guy once told me that I should be upfront about that. Wes looks surprised, then sheepishly tells her that he and Madison just got back together. Bianca is disappointed, but cool with it until Madison notices them talking, shouts, oh, hell no, and beelines over to them, threatening to release the video if Bianca doesn't get the fuck away from her boyfriend. Bianca coolly takes Madison's nastiness and informs her nemesis. Go ahead and release the video. You used to make me so upset, but now I just feel sorry for you. Yeah, I'm someone's duff, but guess what? So are you. So is everyone. There's always going to be somebody prettier or richer than you, but it shouldn't affect how you see yourself. Because of how you see the world, you miss all this great stuff around you. And you treat Wes like he's stupid, but he's not. He's really smart. And I know this stuff is important to you. I support that, but don't tear me down just because I don't support your labels, because they're meaningless.
Burn!
Woohoo! Yeah! Fire! Just then, Principal Buchanan announces the homecoming king and queen, and Madison quickly forgets about Bianca and heads excitedly towards the stage. Madison Morgan wins homecoming queen, and she rushes to the stage to accept her crown. Next, the king is announced, and it's Wesley Rush, but instead of joining his girlfriend on stage, he makes eyes at Bianca. The principal calls him up again, but he doesn't move. And finally, he does move. He makes his way over to Bianca. Bianca asks, aren't you going to get your crown? And he shakes his head. No, I'm going to get the girl. And they kiss in front of the entire school in Madison as she looks on, livid, from the stage. They pull away. Wes tells her, let's get out of here. As Jess and Casey look on impressed, before Jess and Casey say to each other, must have been the dress.
I can't understand why Madison Morgan gets picked as prom or homecoming queen because she's such a bitch. I don't care how attractive you are. It just... So my story was my sister got nominated for prom queen when we went.
Uh-huh.
And it was on a lark because I told her, I'm like, you nominate me and I'll nominate you. And then we'll go to prom together. And maybe one of us, hopefully me, gets nominated to be prom queen. And we did. And I got kicked off the second round and she actually won.
Wow.
She won prom queen. And it was so funny because she went up against two girls. One of them was like the yearbook editor and class president and really smart and like a super overachiever girl.
Yeah.
And the other girl was like the mean, like, hi, oh my God, where's my boyfriend? Totally a Madison type, but more dippy. And so it was just like, I totally didn't think my sister was going to win against the two of them, but I was pleasantly surprised.
That's awesome.
I know. I was like, well, she does have a well-rounded, like, she was in drama. She was in all these things. So it was just funny, though, because the girl that was the Madison of the school, I totally thought was going to win, and my sister did instead of her, and I was like, ha, ha, ha.
Nice. Wesley and Bianca go to the newsroom to hook up, but Bianca doesn't have time for this making out bullshit. She's inspired. She wiggles away from Wes's kisses, saying, just rub my shoulders, because she has to write one quick thing for her article, and goes to the computer and starts typing. What does homecoming mean to me? If you asked me, I would have told you absolutely nothing. But tonight was possibly the greatest night of my life. I've changed my tune. You know that one moment in high school that changes everything? Cut to everyone in the next week reading the article, Tales of a High School Duff. And instead of being ridiculed, this time everyone relates to Bianca, and most people realize that they're duffs too. Next we see Bianca and Mr. Arthur in the newsroom. The article has gone viral, but this time all the comments are positive and people are sharing their own duff stories. Bianca's voiceover is back. She's in her room, writing in her journal, and tells us that Wes passed chemistry and got accepted to Ohio State, which is right next to her at Northwestern. And I say, if by right next to is 6 hours away driving, then I live right next to you too, Tam.
Oh, good.
We're going to just right see over. Each other all the time. So they could see each other a lot, she says. Her phone buzzes and it's a text from Wesley telling her to meet him downstairs. They are officially boyfriend/girlfriend/neighbors and they kiss in the driveway. He asks if he can take her to dinner and she suggests the hipster, unique, independent place, Dave and Buster's, where they can get a dark booth. He loves it when she talks dirty to him and she knows what he loves more. Maybe our knees will touch in the booth. Then she doubles down on the dirty talk and says,
Bianca kiss Wes a lot
in her monster voice while her voiceover finishes with, in the end, it's not about popularity or getting the guy. It's the understanding that no matter what labels come at you, only you can define yourself. Take it from a duck.
The end.
Yay!
Yay!
So, Tamara, what did you think of the duck?
The Duff. I like this movie. I have
a few teeny tiny issues with it.
The one thing I wish I saw more of was the relationship between Bianca and Jess and Casey. Like when they had their falling out and they fell back together like so easily, I would be like, oh, nah, bitch. No, 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 no. You just cut us off like gangbusters and now you're going to come in and accuse us of doing something that we did not do. So I wanted to see more of the friend dynamic because I really liked how they interacted with each other in the beginning. And I was kind of disappointed that that part of the movie tied together so nicely in a pretty little bow that I wanted to see more of, like the ripping off of the wrapping paper and the meaty parts of the relationship, especially when they were making up. That and the Toby guy, like I just cannot get over how thick in the head he was. Like seriously, Toby, with all of that stuff in that scene. And he was like, but I thought that Casey and Jess were coming. And I was like, seriously, bro? Seriously? But other than that, like, those were the only issues I had with them. So I'm going to give this movie 3.5 dry kisses. I thought that Bianca held true to herself. And it was a sort of kind of makeover movie, but all they really did was give her a bra and then put her in a dress. But then she modified the dress and she made the dress her own. So she kept her Bianca-ness and she rocked it towards the end, all the way through the end. What do you mean? Throughout the whole movie. What am I saying? So, yeah, I really appreciated that about her. And, yep, 3.5 dry kisses. Corinne, what do you give this movie?
I give this movie 4 dry kisses. I agree with you about Bianca, and that's one of the reasons why I actually really like this movie, is because they didn't actually really make her over.
No. Nope.
She remained herself throughout the entire thing. And
with a bra.
Yeah, except for the bra. So she was slightly lifted and separated more. But one, when she was wearing the initial dress, it wasn't like that moment. Like, just like she said, it just looked like her in a dress. But then when they made it over, when her and her friends made it over for her, it did. It looked like a Bianca dress. Like, it was perfect. It didn't, it wasn't like, oh, here's this sexy new person. It was like, no, this is Bianca, like, in her, like, fullest state, you know? So
I think I also had huge ish with them calling her ugly and fat. I was just like, no. And I know it was like a catch-all phrase. They're like, it totally doesn't mean you're ugly and fat. I'm like, but it's literally in the title.
Yeah. The diversity, I would say, wasn't as strong as I would have liked in this movie, but there definitely was some. And I feel really bad because in Anything's Possible, it was super diverse and we never even talked about that.
That's something I don't mind because, yes, we should have mentioned it because we do normally talk about the diversity, but, you know, equality doesn't have to be an issue.
No.
I mean, it's just like when you put so many people together, it still works. When you put Pepper in one or two people, that's usually when you're like, oh, there's somebody of a person of color. Oh, there's, you know, somebody that's not a gender norm, or oh, there's this. So it was like so across the board that you almost don't even notice it, which I think is commendable.
Yeah.
And it kind of just like blends into the fabric of the movie.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. It's just something that we do talk about and address in our podcast, which is why I was like, forgot to about.
And we're talking about it now.
Yeah. But yeah, it could have been more diverse. But for me, I really like this movie because it's a makeover movie without a makeover. And a lot of the times I watch these makeover movies and it's like, oh, okay, people are more interested in you now that you have, like, the, like, cuter haircut and the plucked eyebrows and the this and the that.
Yeah, and you put on the contacts instead of the glasses.
Exactly, and it just makes me feel like, oh, I was never enough the way that I was. And in this movie, I was like, I felt like I am enough the way I am, you know.
I have tweezers right here, Corinne. If you want to go take that plucking challenge, I will go with you. Put you some contacts on. Get those eyebrows squared away. You see mine, they have to be non-existent. See? You need to pluck them all off and then draw them back on with emphasis.
Okay, but Tamara, I don't know if you've noticed this, but it's the big brow look is in right now. Like, big brow. Oh. Like, Groucho Marx's brows are in right now.
Okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to get some hair plants and go after my eyebrows with some plugs.
We're going to get you some nice microbladed eyebrows in place. So
my girls are so gone, microblading wouldn't even work. People would be like, do you got your eyebrows tattooed on? Because they're so non-existent. Yes, I do.
Yes, yeah. So four dry kisses on my end, and the other details didn't bother me. Because I'm like, it's a rom-com. Meh. So.
You're just like, fuck you, Toby.
Yeah. That's what I was like. I'm like, I'm filled with rage. I don't care about anything else. So, yeah. And I was filled with rage by Toby. And I was filled with rage by Wesley taking fucking Madison to the Thinking Rock. Like, that was a betrayal of the highest form. Not because she might be interested in Wesley or anything like that, but because that was her special place that she shared with him. And he, like, he ruined the sanctity of it.
Because it was so cool. And he was like, oh, I know what I'm going to do on this cool spot. Make out with a bunch of girls.
Yeah. So, Tamara, my big question for you is, what movies do we have coming up next week?
Well, we're changing our theme. Our theme is going to be, is this love story amazing or awful. But we have to put amazing first because it's May and May's in the title. Amazing or awful. And the next week's movie is going to be Pretty in Pink, the 80s John Hughes classic with Molly Ringwald.
Oh my gosh. I'm excited to dig into this one.
This is going to be, we're going to have some conversations.
Uh-huh. It's going to be half shit show, half fantasy. We'll see what happens. Oh,
it's going to be a fast shit show. Uh-huh. Fantasy.
Yes, fantasy. That's absolutely. Yes.
Yep, yep. That's when a fantasy and a shit show have a baby.
If you have anything that you would like to say about our new word, fantasy, or our new theme, or our theme, Free to Be You and Me, including the Duff, please email us at wonderkiss@gmail.com or reach out to us via the social medias, Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook, all at One Dry Kiss.
That's one spelled O-N-E. And as always, if you could find the time to rate and review us anywhere you listen to this podcast, we'd greatly appreciate it. But in the meantime, we thank you for stopping by and we bid you adieu with one dry kiss. Mwah! See you next time.
See you next time. Oh, shit.
Did you not do the synopsis?
I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know what you're talking about at all. Damn it. I even cussed at myself.
Just add it in later.
Okay. Okay.
Corinne, speaking of Free to Be Me and You, do you have a synopsis?
Why, yes. Yes, I do.
Witty funny stuff, witty funny stuff, witty funny stuff, witty funny stuff.
I'll have it ready by the end of our episode.
Okay, great. That's perfect.